Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to African Conversations. Today, our guest is Randall Kennedy, author of his latest book, The Persistence of the Color Line. Randall Kennedy is the Michael R. Klein Professor of Law at Harvard University and focuses his research on the intersection of racial conflict and legal institutions in American life. Welcome to African Conversations, Professor Kennedy.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. The title of your latest book is The Persistence of the Color Line. Can you tell our audience about how this title relates to the subject matter contained within this work?
The central idea of the book is that the race question remains a big issue in American life, in American culture, in American politics, notwithstanding the election of our country's first black president. And so what I wanted to say is that It's a tremendous landmark in our country's history, the election of the first black president. That certainly suggests there's been a considerable change, but racial problems still remain. And not only do they still remain, but they will undoubtedly remain after the presidency of Barack Obama.
Yes, that's sad to say that those problems are still here. Can we be realistic in your estimation of expecting an era of a post-racial America?
I guess it all depends on what one means by post-racial. If one means that, is it realistic to think that race consciousness or race prejudice or the consequences of our racial past will melt away anytime soon? Yeah, that's very unrealistic. That's not going to happen. We live in a nation that is still bedeviled by the race question. Racial conflict pops up in every aspect of American life. Obviously, in this book, I'm mainly talking about politics, but every aspect of American life, one sees the race line, the color line.
Yes, and I think Dr. Du Bois also mentioned that the color line will be the problem of the 20th century in 1903. So I guess you have further stated that for the 21st century, that the color line still persists.
It persists. It changes. I mean, it's, again, there's been lots of change. It had to have changed considerably for Barack Obama to occupy the White House. I mean, this would have been inconceivable. This would have been impossible 50 years ago. So there's certainly been change. But even though there has been change, and a lot of change, positive change, still race is very much a part of American life. Barack Obama became president by overcoming his blackness. And to the extent that a person still has to overcome his or her blackness, that tells us that the race line is still very much here. It is still an impediment. It's less an impediment. Again, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, it would have been so much of an impediment that he would not have been able to overcome it. He would not have been able to occupy the White House. So there's been change. But any black politician still is in the position of having to overcome his blackness if he is running for an office at the state level or at the national level.
Exactly. And that that situation of having to overcome this, or even introducing some odd concept of color blindness on some part of Caucasian liberals, to have to make a statement that they don't see color, that in order to accept a black person as a friend or something, they have to not see the blackness, because if they see the blackness, then their reflex would be to despise or to reject us.
Yeah, I talk about that in the book. So I guess it was after Barack Obama's first State of the Union, the commentator Chris Matthews talked about, you know, he's a big Obama supporter, and he talked about how, you know, how he was swept away by President Obama, but then he talked about how he didn't see him as a black person. And, you know, I'm sure that in his view, that was a good thing. On the other hand, it did leave the implication that you just voiced. So what? If you did see him as a black person, you wouldn't be able to embrace him, or you wouldn't be able to embrace him, you know, as much. I do think that it is still the case that, you know, black people are still have to overcome their blackness, and again, that's why we still live in a society in which the color line persists.
Yes, and I mean, we like this overcoming blackness to, it seems as though, well, I know we can say more than just a perception, but pandering to, I would say, white America's, even the liberals' concept that black is bad, so I have to present myself as less black in order to make them feel comfortable. I mean, all things considered, everyone feels comfortable when you relate to them more and more.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I think politicians have to do that. Now, having said that, you know, politicians do that outside of the racial context. I mean, you know, John F. Kennedy, when he ran in 1960, trying to become the first Catholic president, he went out of his way to, one, sort of make his Catholicism palatable. He went out of his way to assure non-Catholics that he would not privilege Catholics, that he would not be down on non-Catholics. He did all of that just the same way that President Obama, in seeking to become the first black president, did many of the same things. And in a way, you know, no one should be surprised at that. And with respect to electoral politics, where getting people's vote is the name of the game, you know, that's going to be the dynamic. And, you know, we shouldn't, frankly, expect anything other. That's
right.
Just the way it is.
Right. And I think there's not enough, I would say, candid discourse about that as a fact. I mean, we all know it. It's like some unspoken or well-known secret,
mm-hmm,
that in order to, I guess, be active in quote-unquote mainstream American culture, that you must, let's say, deculturize yourself as a black person, a person of color.
In certain ways. You know, again, this operates outside of the realm of race. You know, I'm a lawyer. There's this notion called legal fictions, in which we all know in day-to-day life certain realities, but we paper over those realities for various reasons. It's sort of a type of denial that at one level we know what the score is, but at another level we paper it over, we deny it. And you know, that's what's going on here. So, for instance, when Senator Reid, when Harry Reid was quoted after the election as having said, well, you know, Barack Obama had a, you know, stood a really good chance to win, he thought, in part because he spoke without a Negro dialect.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, light-skinned. And everybody, a lot of people, not everybody, but a lot of people jumped all over Senator Reid and, you know, called him racist. He wasn't being racist. He was just stating a fact on both counts. He was stating a sociological fact. That's right. People who are dark-skinned are discriminated against more in our society. Not only are they discriminated against more by white people, they're discriminated against more by people of color. And similarly, people who sound a certain way are discriminated against in our society. So, you know, those are just realities that we should know about and that we have to negotiate.
And, I mean, I know neither one of us are psychologists, but we've read in maybe some psychological texts by various authors that denial of problems is definitely unhealthy. And us not really, I guess, openly making it plain, at least for the people who are observing us, our young, to see us, let's say, putting on airs as though we don't, we have to almost be pressured to admit these realities in order to function with the least amount of organized opposition
mm-hmm.
in American life. Could you speak to that, please?
Well, I'd say yes and no. I mean, you know, especially in politics, nobody says everything that's on their minds. We don't expect. In fact, we would probably look down on a politician who we viewed as overly candid, who said everything that was on his or her mind. You know, there is such a thing as diplomacy.
Yeah.
There is such a thing as saying something between the lines as opposed to right on the line. I mean, social life is complicated, and we all know, I think, you know, black people know, for instance, that there are certain things that even the President of the United States has to be careful about and maybe, frankly, stay away from. President Obama doesn't like to talk about racial issues. He doesn't. Now, I don't say that necessarily criticizing him. I just think it's just one of those realities. It's probably not in his electoral benefit to talk a lot about racial issues. So he doesn't. Now, we ought to recognize that. I think most black people recognize that. But they cut him slack because they recognize, they understand the dilemma that he faces. So, you know, politicians are diplomats. Politicians speak in all sorts of different codes. And black people and other people are aware of that. And sometimes that's a bad thing. And when it's a bad thing, we say, well, this person is, you know, being in denial. On the other hand, sometimes it's a good thing, and when it's a good thing, we say, ah, that person's being diplomatic.
Right. Right, and I understand that. I agree that sometimes codes must be spoken, everything can't be spoken in all candor, because you know, it takes away from the ability to be able to get things done most effectively.
Yeah, and different people have different roles. So, I mean, the President of the United States, you know, he's a politician. He's, you know, he's an electoral politician, and that role puts certain limits on him. On the other hand, there are other people who don't have to face the discipline of electoral politics, for instance, journalists, for instance, scholars, and, you know, they can say things, frankly, that the President of the United States can't say.
Right.
I mean, it's funny how power works. Sometimes power imposes its own discipline. Again, here's the President of the United States, a person with the nuclear arsenal at his fingertips, But he has to be real, real, real careful and tip. He has to tippy toe around, you know, racial issues. A year ago, or whenever it was, when police officer wrongly arrested my colleague up here, Henry Louis Gates, the president simply said, well, the police officer seems to have acted stupidly. Barack Obama did not claim that the police officer acted in a racially discriminatory way. He didn't make that claim. He simply said the officer acted stupidly.
That's right.
Having said that, people got up in arms. Glenn Beck goes on television and says, this shows that the President of the United States hates white people. It was ridiculous. He didn't even say anything about racial discrimination, yet people, at the least bit of criticism of a police officer, people were making, you know, willing to make a big racial issue of it. Well, in light of that, I mean, Barack Obama, you know, again, he's an electoral politician. That's why he walks on, you know, he walks very carefully around the race issue.
Thank you, Dr. Kennedy, for those insightful words. We'll take a break, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Become a part of the Women's Song Community Experience. Find us at facebook.com/womansong. Follow us on Twitter at Women's Song. And for highlights of our shows, check out our YouTube channel. We will do the thing that many think cannot be done.
There's much talk about revolution, but what does that entail? How can we spend a sufficient amount of time on revolution when we are trapped in a system that requires us to spend a generous portion of our income on basic needs? How is it that we claim to be revolutionaries, yet we still fund our own oppression? The solution is that we must become as creative with funding our liberation as we are with spending our time and energy on things of little importance. The goal of African money is to uncover ways to obtain and retain financial support, first for our own families and ultimately for the liberation of our people as well, while minimizing our support for the establishment. According to Henry David Thoreau, a man is rich in proportion to the number of things he can afford to leave alone. For African people, it is amazing how we are controlled by mere trinkets and nonsense. We crave independence from the white supremacist system, and yet we continue to value the petty compensation offered to us by our former slave masters. If liberation is our goal, we must first compile a list of what we will need to accomplish that. Join us on African Money on Facebook.
Black in public, black out loud, and black on purpose. For some, it's where your deprogramming begins, and it's where others on the path come for fellowship. Come on in and kick your shoes off. Visit us at www.facebook.com/blackinpublic. Put your fist in the air, y'all, because we're going to keep it black.
And we're back with Professor Randall Kennedy and his new book, The Persistence of the Color Line. Professor Kennedy, you were talking about the beer summit, and
yes,
how President Obama came to defense of the, of your colleague Henry Professor Gates.
Yes,
and in that situation, they accused him of saying he hates white people and all these other things that he did not say, and even though the police officer was the one who was being, we would say, wrong in the offense, and did make a bad decision by arresting a man in his own home.
Yep.
For breaking in his own house, but the media, we would say the white media, came to the defense of the police officer and attacked the president, a black president, most importantly, because we've never seen that in history where I guess a president is attacked for, I guess, verbally, I guess, judging and the misconduct of a peace officer or anything like that.
Well, you know, it was a remarkable episode. I mean, the officer, and I'm willing to stipulate that he, you know, fine record. I don't have anything against the officer, but it seemed to me quite clear in the circumstance of this case that he was in the wrong, and for simply saying that, for saying that he thought that the officer had acted stupidly, that was the key word. People just went, many people, again, attributed a racial motive to the president, accused him of being racially discriminatory, which had no basis. But, again, that shows what the president is up against. It's precisely that that willingness to jump to the conclusion that so many people jump to in that instance. It's precisely that which prompts the president to really stay, you know, way clear of racial issues. Now, you know, some people, there are some black commentators who are very critical of the president for staying clear of racial issues, for, you know, for trying to stay clear. And you know, my own view of this is that in many instances they're simply not being realistic. They're not recognizing the bind that he's in. He's not in a seminar room. He's not giving a speech in which really all he's attempting to do is to tell the truth of the matter. He's attempting to govern a large country as a member of a group that has historically been despised in this country. He's in a very difficult position. And whenever people confront this issue of race and the president, they have to be aware of the dilemma that he's in.
Yes, it's a very peculiar predicament, which is why I guess a lot of people on the, let's say, the right, political right, are extremely guarded that no justice will be served with regard to compensating the oppressed persons in the society, being that the commander-in-chief is a member of the oppressed group.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I mean, when people perpetrate criminal acts and they've been, would say, been avoiding any kind of recompense, they don't want to make any type of payment. You mentioned this in your lecture at Dartmouth College about Thaddeus Stevens and how when he proposed that the land of the secessionist planters be confiscated and distributed to the former captives as reparations.
Right.
And they told him he had gone far too far.
Right. Well, you'll never hear, again, you know, Barack Obama, you will never hear the term reparations come from him. I mean,
right.
You know, he's not going to be for reparations. He's not going to push issues that will give ammunition to his detractors to allow them to say, aha, see, this black guy is president of the United States, and he's just going to, you know, do stuff for the black people. He's going to try to neutralize that critique. And, you know, even though, for instance, there are people who are making the claim that the health care reform legislation that Barack Obama pushed through Congress, some people are making the claim that actually that was all for black people. There are going to be people who are going to be making the claim that anything he does is going to be for black people, even though, you know, it doesn't say expressly that it's for black people. The real motive is to help black people. That's what Barack Obama is facing, and that's why he has made a concerted effort to conduct himself in such a way that he can credibly say, listen, I'm president for all the people. And I think that the great mass of black people understand that. The great mass of black people understand that it is highly unlikely that there will be any expressly racial initiatives put forth by Barack Obama. Most black people understand that. They understand the dilemma he faces. They understand that he's simply not going to be able to push through any sort of reparations-like, you know, initiative, or even push through, you know, reform of our, you know, with respect to mass incarceration. They understand that, but they also understand the pickle that he's in. And they're going to be disciplined and realistic and back him nonetheless. And I think that they are wise in taking that position.
Yes, it is wise in order to avoid all the very realistically dangerous circumstance in which I guess all non-whites are in this place. And that's the subject that. Another one of those, I guess we can call it denial in some cases and diplomacy in others, but no one wants to talk about because of the rhetoric from black speakers and lecturers and social critics and pundits were be to use all the attacks on that various people on the right make against President Obama by saying he is doing something for black people, saying, well, see, that shows you that they don't want black people to benefit from American society.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, by saying that they could, take that energy and use those remarks as a testimony against those people by saying they wanted to continue to be disenfranchised, marginalized, and all that, and to basically bind the hands of President Obama from being able to be of any benefit to non-white people, and that
oh,
would
sure,
be
sure. Sure,
I
think
we don't,
I mean,
we don't
being,
hear that.
He's being, he's being scrutinized all the time, and you know that's yet another obstacle that he faces. He's being scrutinized. Anything that looks or can be construed as him benefiting black people, something's going to be made of it. And, he's very careful. He's very cautious. Some would say he's too cautious. I think that sometimes he's too cautious. But when I say that, I also say very quickly that, you know, he really does face tremendous obstacles. Some of the reaction against President Obama, I would say a very substantial part of the reaction against President Obama, is racial. It's not packaged in that way. They don't say explicitly, well, we're against this guy because he's black. But, they use all sorts of code phrases, all sorts of camouflage. But, you know, when you get right down to it, when you tear away the camouflage, anti-black feeling is behind an appreciable amount of the quite intense reaction that President Obama has to contend with.
That's very real and very dangerous situation, it's something that he must do in order to hold that position.
Yeah, he's in a tough position. You think about it. I mean, he in certain ways is facing what, of course, the first set of black electoral politicians, I think, of the first Reconstruction. You know, mm-hmm. there was a strong reaction against them in the aftermath of the Civil War, and there's a strong reaction against Barack Obama. I think of a couple of summers ago when there were those town meetings when people would show up to them with guns, with rifles. I mean, it was absolutely extraordinary. What would have happened with black people? Imagine black people showing up to some political town meeting with, you know, with guns and pistols and rifles. You wouldn't have heard the end of it.
Right, right.
But that was done with him, and he had to carefully negotiate that. Again, I'm not saying don't be critical of the president. He needs criticism. He can err just like everybody else can err. But at the same time that, you know, we're critical of him, we also have to recognize the extraordinary difficulties he faces. And, of course, part of those extraordinary difficulties stems from the fact that he's black.
Okay. And one thing I recall during his campaign, I remember a lot of people, non-whites, especially black people that I know, that were supportive of, at least not just supportive, but they were extremely euphoric about the hope, the possibility of a strong contender for the presidency being a black man.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard this phrase endlessly, that everything is going to be better now. All my problems are over.
Well, and anybody who said that was just remarkably naive.
I know. And I would hear it. I mean, you go to the convenience, you see the newspaper, and there'll be people just tell you. You don't even know them. They just walk up to you and say, everything's going to be better. And it was frightening to me.
Yeah.
Somebody walked up to you and said, hello, how are you doing? And they exchange pleasantries or salutations, and they just go into describing to you how much better everything's going to be. You know, racism is going to be over, and you hear it, and you think you just walked into, I don't know where I walked into. So what's happening? What is this doing to people? Because they're not understanding that, you know, how much he won't be able to do.
Yeah. Well, you know, in 2008, part of what got him over the hump was this extraordinary enthusiasm. There was this sort of millenarian feeling that we've reached the mountaintop. You know, we have arrived, and you do need enthusiasm. And it was a great thing, and it was a wonderful thing to see black people standing in line, getting up early in the morning. I mean, it was one of black America's finest moments, finest hours. I mean, black people should feel good about what they did in helping to elect Barack Obama. At the same time, we have to recognize that, you know, the United States government, the governmental system, it is one of divided powers. It is one of checks and balances, as we've seen. The President of the United States is a powerful person, but the President of the United States is checked by other powerful forces in America. And there are going to be limits on what the president can do, any president can do, and we've seen that. So people have to be realistic even while they're recognizing that it's a good thing is happening. Hopefully there will be more good to come from President Obama, but there are obviously big limits on what he can accomplish. And people ought not, you know, go from euphoria to apathy bred by disappointment. You know, we have to be realistic. We shouldn't be disappointed. We should just simply be realistic and understand that change is a very difficult thing. It doesn't come from one election. It doesn't come from two elections. It doesn't come from just getting a president of the United States. Change, real change, deep-seated change has to take place at lots of different levels. The national level, but also the local level, the political level, but also the cultural level. We have to work this thing out at every level and on every field, there are 1,000 struggles, not just one, not just two, thousands of struggles that we have to be engaged in and engaged in fully.
Well, thank you for those encouraging words and wise ones at that.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your show. I really appreciate it.
Are you welcome, and you're welcome to come back. I'd love to hear about that other, the GWP project.
Yes, sir.
I'm really excited about that one.
Well, I'll tell you, when I write more books, and I plan to, I'd love to be on your show.
But thank you very much for being willing to come on.
We appreciate you for being with us today, and we can't wait to have you back. Dr. Randall Kennedy, author of The Persistence of the Color Line. Get your copy wherever fine books are sold. And thank you for joining us. And until we meet again for more African Conversation.
Thank you for listening.